as we've been in this series of messages. It's simply called Just Saying Truth. And we've looked at a number of different words as we've gone along. I think this is an amazing word. This is a liberating word. And it's probably the most countercultural word that we're going to look at. In fact, we can look at this word physically two different ways. I want everybody to take your hand out and close your fist like this. This is the way most people live their life. They live their life closed-fisted. As soon as they latch on to something, as soon as they get something, they're holding on tightly. They're squeezing. All right, now while this hand is squeezed, now take this hand and open it up. This is the God life. This is the following Jesus life. This is the open-handed life. And in order to go from here to here, you have to be able to say enough. Okay, say that word with me, enough. When you start saying enough, you're going to go from the closed-fisted life to the open-handed life. Now, I know it's difficult because when we were little kids, and we started out with the whole Christmas thing, and you started looking towards Christmas, and you wanted to get stuff. As soon as Christmas was over, you were looking for the next stuff. Because we tend to live life looking for something a little more. Something inside of us really starts early, and it's like a little taker that's inside of us. We want to take, 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 take. And when we've taken some, we want to take, 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 and take some more. But when we come to know Jesus and we begin to follow Jesus, something inside of us changes and we go, well, maybe we ought not be taken quite so much. In fact, the word enough is ultimately a matter of faith. If you're taking notes this morning, I want to ask you just a key question that you can ponder throughout the week. And it's simply that, do you believe God will give you enough? Do you truly believe that God will give you enough? Now, it doesn't matter if I look at, take animal kingdom, for example. Animals have a way of just taking more and more and more. If you've ever owned a goldfish and you just thought, well, I'm going on vacation, I'll spread enough food across the top of that water, it'll be fine until I get back. You'll find that goldfish will keep eating and keep eating and keep eating and keep eating, and that goldfish, it'll kill it. In fact, when Clarissa and I were newly married, I wanted to get some fish. I love fish, and I got a fish tank, and I actually liked and wanted a particular kind of fish, was an Oscar. An Oscar is a freshwater fish that can actually grow to about 12 inches long, and it's really cool because they eat other fish. And there's something about that I like, and it's probably, this was done in ignorance and a bit of immaturity, but I wanted to see, you know, how many fish I could get. I had two, but I wanted to see how many fish I could get them to eat, so I didn't feed them for a little while, and then I went to the pet store, and I bought some goldfish, and I put the goldfish in there, and man, those Oscars, they went after it. In fact, my one Oscar, he went after it so much that he had filled himself, and yet there was another goldfish. So it went from the tail and grabbed the goldfish, and the head of that goldfish was sticking out the mouth of that Oscar doing this. Now, why am I telling this story? This led my wife to saying, I'm not going to be around those kinds of fish, and they got flushed down the toilet. Now, you may not get flushed down the toilet for eating more and more and more, but the reality is that people who live the life that just goes after more, the people who live in a way that they just want to get a hold of what's next, their relationships, they ultimately go down the toilet. And so I believe that what we're going to look at today really is something that is going to liberate you and allow you to walk in a much healthier fashion with people around you. Because here's the challenge. Enough is elusive. It's just a reality. It's elusive. It's hard to get a hold of enough. In finances, in your monthly finances, yearly finances, how much is enough? Most people that live here are going to say enough is just a little bit more. And so what happens is you find yourself, and we're going to call this spot on the stage today, just our current reality, where you are today. So you make 25, 35, 45, 65, 85, 105, 155,000 a year. This is where you're at right now. And when you live like this, over there is enough. And so you start moving towards the enough. You put your family at the altar of a pay raise. You put your marriage aside for just a little bit more because over here is enough. But you get over here and it wasn't enough. It was elusive. It got away. In fact, our culture really illustrates this in some respects through the buffet. In 1940 in Vegas, the American restaurant called Buffet got started. And when people go to the buffet, probably not you and I, they go and they pay their money for the buffet, and they're going to get their money's worth, right? And so they go back, and they go back, and they go back. And here it seems like enough is measurable. Because you're about sick when you walk out the door. Because you've totally filled and totally plumped yourself up. But unlike the buffet, many other things in life, it's not that easy to find enough. It's a little bit more elusive than that. Where we're at to where we think we need to be, that more level in between, the space in between, this is the discontented zone. This is where you live in a place going, I just got to, and you can finish it any way you want. And our culture, it feeds into that just fine. It shows you all the ways that you should not be contented with your life as it exists today. But here's the hope. From that place to that place can come all the way down to contentment. Because if you take nothing else this morning, you have to understand this key understanding. Jesus wants to heal you of a life of more. Jesus wants to heal you of that. It's what he's in the business to do. You can live a contented life without having to go for the more. Which brings us to Luke, the 19th chapter. Because Jesus encountered a person who was going after the more. A guy by the name of Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus, you'll find by the end, went from a life of this to a life of this. First couple verses, it's very revealing. Luke records that Jesus entered Jericho and made his way through the town. There was a man there named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector in the region, and he had become very rich. Now, just those two verses, you'll notice that where this takes place is a place called Jericho. And if you go back in the Old Testament, you'll find that Jericho was the first place that the Israelites encountered when they crossed over into the promised life or the promised land. It was held by the enemy, and they marched around. Do you know how many times they marched around Jericho? This is a good trivia question. The correct answer is 13. Once a day for 6 days and seven times on the seventh day. Yeah, you can use that later. But they marched around it, and it was destroyed. But God made a caveat to that battle. He said, you cannot take anything from that town. Because it was customary when they would go in battle, they would take it. Now, the Israelites had been accustomed to living a life. They knew what it was like to live where they were making someone else's life better. So this was their first chance for them to make their own lives better. But God said, no. I don't want you to get in the habit of life of more. So the very first thing you're going to do is that when you beat Jericho, that's mine. And so he's saying, you got to win the battle and then do this. So this story takes place quite a number of years later, but the same issue. And Jesus is there, and there's this man named Zacchaeus, and he's a tax collector. Now, This guy knew money. He knew money. Okay? You may not know money, but you may know money. He knew what it meant to be rich. He knew what it meant to stand out. He knew what it meant to have whatever he wanted because he lived a life of moving towards the more. And then in verse 3, it says something interesting about him. It says he tried to get a look at Jesus, but he was too short to see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree beside the road, for Jesus was going to pass by. So he, you know, he's a short guy. You know, I don't know if you ever sang that Zacchaeus was a wee little man and a wee little man was he, you know, when you're in Sunday school. He was a short guy. And here's the thing, though. Luke found this to be very important. He records that he ran and he also climbed a tree. Now, for Zacchaeus, who was wealthy, I mean, he knew how to get money. That means that he didn't run. In the ancient Middle East days, a person of renown, they didn't run. People waited for them. So he wasn't going to run either. But Jesus was there, and he ran. So his first act of kind of acting in a less than couth way was he ran. But then he goes up into a tree. And he goes up into this tree because everything in his life, whether it was the height of his physical stature or his financial, would not allow him to be able to see Jesus. So he had to put himself in a tree in order to see Jesus. Now, the other thing, and we're going to come back to that in a moment, but what's interesting is that it's another incredibly undignified act for him to climb the tree. And so he's in this tree, and then we read in verse 5, when Jesus came by and looked up at Zacchaeus, he called him by name. Zacchaeus, he said, come down, I must be a guest at your home today. Zacchaeus quickly climbed down, took Jesus to his house in great excitement and joy. But the people were displeased. He's gone to be a guest of a notorious sinner, they grumbled. So Jesus looks up, and Jesus sees Zacchaeus in a tree. And then Jesus says, come down because I'm going to your house. I want you to get what's happening here. Zacchaeus acts very differently than he's ever acted because he's run and he's put himself in a position he probably never imagined himself in order to see Jesus. So you're here this morning and you're thinking, yeah, I'm in a season. I may not be in a tree, but I'm in a season I never expected myself to be in before. God will allow you to move toward a season that you've never been in before so you can get the right view of Jesus. So he looks down and gets the right view of Jesus, and Jesus looks up to him and says, I want to go to your house. Because true transformation, whether it's transformation from this kind of a life to this kind of a life, or a life that is one problem to another problem, to a life to where it starts to work, happens when Jesus comes to your house. And so you are in a place going, I've worked hard for where I'm at. I don't want anyone, let alone the God of the universe, to see me like this. I've got to wonder if Zacchaeus didn't have a little bit of short man syndrome. Have you ever met somebody like that? I played handball with a couple of guys. They both did not know each other, working for the same airline companies. They're both 747 jet pilots. And one guy was, you know, about this tall, and the other guy was average height. And this guy this tall, he was always trying to prove himself. Because when he looked at himself in the mirror, he saw someone that was short. I want you to remember that because we're going to come back to that here in a moment. Because here you have a little bit of a transition in this story. It says in verse 7 that the people were displeased. And it's hard to imagine people that would get upset with Jesus hanging out with an IRS bureaucrat. Hard to imagine people doing that. Hard to imagine people looking at somebody who is at a totally different political affiliation, because that's what he was. He was a guy that didn't care about Israel, because the Romans, when they came in, they didn't kick the Israelites out. They just taxed them. They recognized that if they had rule over people, it was a way they could get more money. And so Rome was this government entity that was always trying to get more money. So somewhere along the line, Zacchaeus went, you know, I think I can help you with your tax problem. And so people would come and say, hey, I got 50 sheep, and I got 50 cattle, and I got 100 acres, but I don't want to pay that many taxes. Can you help me with that? He said, sure, I can help you that for a fee. And that's how he began to make money. And so people looked at him as going to have Jesus come into their house, and they grumbled and they complained. Now, there's some subliminal messages I'm giving along the lines for us here. That we can look on Facebook, or we can look on TV and see people who are totally different from us in their ideology, who you might think are selling America under, that really just needs the right view of Jesus so Jesus can come into their home. But if you take and put a wedge by demeaning them and telling them who they are not, opportunity can be taken away. Now, that really wasn't in my notes, but I wanted to throw that in, because I think we need to get that. We live in a culture that is more interested in telling people the way they need to be rather than just loving them and letting God restore and change them. In between verses 6 and 8, there's this gap, and we don't really know everything that takes place. What we know is that Zacchaeus goes and with Jesus to his house for dinner. And we know that they were not by themselves by what's written here in a moment, but we're not told what's taken place. But in between that scripture and what we hear next, something happened. Jesus talked to him or said something over dinner or on the way that caused Zacchaeus to go from this kind of life to this kind of life. I mean, maybe Jesus, and I'm just speculating here. I have no idea what was said. Nobody does. Maybe Jesus recognized Zacchaeus here and said, Zacchaeus, remember when you were young and you didn't have anything? And you started this whole IRS scheme and you really started doing okay and you bought your first donkey? Remember that? Remember how that made you feel? And as you rode that donkey, somebody from Persia came into town and you saw him riding that one hump camel. And what started out as a good, honest life turned into something different because you wanted more. And so you started after it and you got down here and you got your one humped camel. And then someone came from Egypt with a two-hump camel. And you went, boy, I need that. And then you found that that wasn't good enough, so you started buying the clothes, and you moved to the nicer neighborhood, and you da-da-da. And somewhere along the line, you discovered that enough was elusive. And something happened in his heart. Something changed him, because notice what happens in verse 8. And so the meanwhile is really over dinner, and this would have not been uncustom in that day that the host of a dinner would have stood and done some form of speech honoring people and thanking them for coming and, you know, whatever was said. But he stands up, says he stood up before the Lord and said, I will give half my wealth to the poor, Lord. And if I have cheated people on their taxes, I will give them back four times as much. he had a moment where he could say in his heart, it's enough. In fact, for him, he said it was more than enough because he said, I can give half away. And anyone I've stolen in between that donkey and my two-humped camel, as it were, if I've dishonored somebody and stolen from them, I'll give them four times back. I'll give you three takeaways from this story as we close it out. The first is that people who in their hearts say enough, the enough people, they're first and foremost, they're generous. They're willing to say, I'm going to give. I'm going to give. I recognize all the areas that God has blessed me. So I am going to be a person that gives. He was willing to give half of it away. Enough people, though, they also experience abundance. Because it wasn't just a matter of him giving half of it away. He recognized the abundance that said, I can also give four times, which, by the way, is Levitical law, to give of anybody I've stolen. So he knew, and by the way, he's an accountant. He knew where every red cent, well, every talent, every little shekel was. And he knew that he was blessed beyond belief, that not only he could give half away, but then he could also repay everything that he had stolen. Now I want you to notice verse 9, because this is huge. This is why when we say that we'll trust God and we have enough, this is why it's so liberating. Jesus responded, salvation has come to this home today, for this man has shown himself to be a true son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save those who are lost. Now understand that when he uses the word salvation, he's not saying that it cost Zacchaeus half his money, half his income, and then, you know, and then four times everything he stole to get into heaven. It's not what he's saying. You cannot buy your way into heaven. Tell your neighbor that. You cannot buy your way into heaven. Tell your neighbor. Can't do it. In fact, the word salvation here could be translated deliverance or healing. Because what happened with Zacchaeus is he was healed from a life of more. He could live in his present circumstance contented. He didn't have to go for more. He was able to say, I have enough. Can you say that before the Lord today? If you can't, then you need to allow Jesus to come in such a way that you can say, you have enough. Remember I said that he probably struggled with that short man syndrome, it's the Napoleon or whatever that statement is. Notice what else Jesus says to him, which is huge because this is so much our culture today. He says to him, salvation has come into your home. And then he says these wonderful words. He says, and this man has shown himself to be a true son of Abraham. Because here's what all cultures in all the world at some level will do. They will say that your identity, the person you were intended to be, cannot be found where you are in the moment. It's over there. It's through the next car. It's through the next job. It's through the next whatever. But when he said enough, identity came to him. If you want personal identity and are tired of the struggle of trying to get it through what you do and what you make and what you wear and what you drive and where you live, allow salvation to come into your home and heal you of a false identity and allow the identity of Jesus Christ, who is more than enough, to come and make you who you're supposed to be. That's why people who say enough find the liberating life and are ultimately the most confident people. People who are enough people, they're confident. Not because they're going to look at you and go, I make more money, drive a better car, you know, have a better two-hump camel, whatever. But because they know that they are secure in this wonderful relationship with God, who will take care of every need that they have. Look at Isaiah, and I want to finish out here. Isaiah 58, verse 9, says, then when you call, the Lord will answer, "Yes, I am here." He will quickly reply. Remove the heavy yoke of oppression. Will you say those words with me? Remove the heavy yoke of oppression. We're going to talk about that here in a moment. Stop pointing your finger and spreading vicious rumors. Feed the hungry and help those in trouble. Then your light will shine out from the darkness. And the darkness around you will be as bright as noon. The Lord will guide you continually, giving you water when you are dry, restoring your strength. You will be like a well-watered garden, like an ever-flowing spring. This verse to me is the epitome of the nothing is impossible life. If you're here this morning and you're going after the nothing is impossible life, and you say, I want to be able to live saying it's enough, then there really are some things that you have to do to help get you there. And I've asked Matthew to come and talk about one of the ways that we ignite change is through Financial Peace University. And he's going to come because I love his vision. He really has a vision of a debt-free church. And by the way, we don't have any debt at Bethel. That means everybody at Bethel is debt-free. Come on up. And I just want to talk a little bit about it so you just kind of get a sense of what that's about.
So just real quickly for the numbers people and the non-numbers people, if I were to say 75%, okay, if I said 75% of us are going to go out to dinner today, that would be most people are going to go out to dinner today, mm-hmm. right? Okay, so let's use that word most, because most is a pretty easy thing to say. So if I said today is...
June 30th?
Today is June 30th.
Yep.
Sorry. Tomorrow is July 1st. So we've got two big days that are important. And for most people, that's a hard day, because they're looking at it and they're saying, one, where did my money go? Where did it go? And two, July 1st, I've got mortgage, I've got a car payment, I've got utilities, I've got food. There's all these expenses that have to come to us. And that's a huge thing. And so for many people, that living nothing is impossible life, just it's not there right now. And it's got to be taken care of. And so that's where, you know, Financial Peace University comes into play, is that we really get to say and look at this stuff and create some budgets and create some targets and start being creative and telling our money where it's going to go versus just saying, oh, where did it went? Where did it go? What is all this thing?
Yeah. And remember, I had you quote that, take off the yoke of oppression. Most people would say money is a tool. But in America, money is a drug. And money has gripped you and now oppresses you. Financial Peace really kind of helps with that, doesn't it?
Yeah, because debt is keeping us from living that impossible life.
Yeah.
And Financial Peace University just really gives you those tools to create the budget, to start walking through some of the places and looking at, you know, what is enough? And telling yourselves, okay, can I do it with this versus with my two-hump camel?
Yes. Amen. Thank you, Matthew. So the worship team is going to come. We're going to receive the morning tithe and offering in a minute. But we are going to pray, but I want you to do one other thing. I want you to take out your welcome card. And if you are tired of money controlling you and you want to control money, then you have to write Financial Peace on your welcome card. And when the offering plate comes by, put it in the offering. I really believe prophetically the Lord wanted me to point out those that were to give half their income this morning. I'm joking. Because here's the thing. When you encounter Jesus, I don't need to do that stuff. Jesus will free you to do what you can do. He was talking about the end of the month. I set up my next month's budget before the end of the month. And I just had a decision to make about the We Will this time. And the We Will, if you're not normally here, is our campaign that we're going to do some remodeling with. And I had to make a decision. Was I going to give above and beyond? And I said, Lord, I can't help but not do it. I want, my natural tendency was this, but I want to beat this. But I can do that because of Financial Peace University. And so I'm going to pray. I'm going to pray for your finances. And, you know, listen, you don't need a giving talk. You guys are faithful in your giving. Thank you for that. Grow in the giving. Don't allow the enemy to trap you into this, to give this. But let's ask the Lord this week, though, to show us all the ways in our life we've tried to live this way, thinking we can catch up to more. Father, thank you for your goodness. And Lord, I thank you that, Lord, you are more than enough. And Lord, I pray every person will make a decision this morning to allow you to be enough.